This call is now recorded.
Welcome to this CCWG on Enhancing Guidance Accountability Plenary Call, number 21. This is Workstream 2, and September 27, 2017, at 13 UTC. So it feels like it's been forever since our last call, and many things have happened since then. I've seen a lot of discussion in the different working groups list, some of them a bit heated, which is okay. But we have invited Herb Wei to remind us on the standards of behavior. I will jump to Herb in a minute, but first I would like to remind us all to update your statement of interest if you haven't done so. If there have been any movements or any changes, please be kind enough to update your statement of interest. If you have any doubts or problems with that task, staff will be happy to assist you as usual. And we have a very, very packed agenda today. We have a lot of topics to cover and many readings on different reports from the different working groups to be done. So we will be implementing a two-minute timer in order to try to hold as much as possible to our schedule. And we will be actually enforcing this two-minute timer. So please be mindful when you take the floor to keep an eye on this two-minute timer because we know that many here want to speak and to have their voices heard, and we would like to, of course, accommodate as many speakers as possible, but we can't do this without having an organized participation, and for this, we are implementing this two-minute timer. So I would like to welcome Herb Wei, our ombudsman, and he's here to explain us and to remind us on the standards of behavior. We have had many heated discussions in the list, as I was saying, and I think it's handy and useful to have Herb with us. And I would like to now give the floor to Herb so we can have a reminder on these standards of behavior. So Herb, if you could please take the floor.
Thank you, Leon. Everybody can hear me okay?
Okay. Yes, we hear you. There's a little bit of an echo somewhere.
Okay, I think that's better. Good. Greetings around the world. Herb Wei, ICANN Ombudsman for the record. I just wanted really to take a moment to underscore the professionalism and civility that I have observed across the subgroups as you all work together towards your respective final products. We're in the home stretch, and I see the stress levels rising, and I see deadlines looming. So I would like to underline that working groups imply collaborative thinking, accommodation, and mutual respect. So when things do heat up, try to be the person that is part of cooling things down. If you live professionalism, if you live respect, and you live accommodation, you will be part of making ICANN a safer place for everyone. So thank you for offering me this opportunity to remind everybody of the ICANN expected standards of behavior and community anti-harassment policy at the same time. And I wish you all a very productive plenary. Thank you very much, and have a good meeting.
Thank you very much, Herb, for your intervention. There is someone's mic who is not muted, and I can hear an echo. So please make sure that you mute your mic if you're not speaking. Thank you very much. So on the next agenda item, we will have some administration announcements, and for that, I would like to give the floor to Bernie. So, Bernie, could you please guide us through these administrative announcements.
Thank you very much, Leon. Just very quickly, I'm not going to put up the diagram of the timeline. I think we've hammered this home time and time again. The reality is that we have a few more plenary calls before we head to Abu Dhabi, but the final one is on 18th of October. If a document is not in for first reading at the 18th of October, it cannot be read a second time at the 27th of October face-to-face in Abu Dhabi, and it cannot meet the schedule. Enough said, we said this often enough. Speaking of 27 October, just a friendly reminder, we will be in Abu Dhabi, 27 October, full-day meeting as usual, details to follow. Also of interest to this group, there's a reminder, there's two high-interest sessions in Abu Dhabi. We will be presenting the up-to-date results in a high-interest session right after the opening plenary. And the co-chairs will be leading that, and that has been sponsored by the ALAC, the GNSO, and the CCNSO. So we're looking forward to being able to present our status of advancement on all our points and how we're going to wrap this up and get feedback from the community at that high-interest session. For those who've been involved in jurisdiction and following it, the GAC has also gotten a high-interest topic session on jurisdiction, and that will be later on in the week. That's it for me. Thank you. Back to you, Leon.
Thank you very much, Bernie. So our next agenda item is an update on the legal committee, and we have two things to update you on. And there were some questions that were sent directly to ICANN Legal in regard to recommendation 8 of the Ombudsman Group and the independence of the proposed Ombuds Advisory Panel. These questions were sent directly to ICANN Legal on approval of cultures. And these questions, I believe, are pending a reply from ICANN Legal, or if they have been already answered, I apologize as I have missed them, but I believe that they're pending still. And we have also, at the September 13th meeting of the Transparency Subgroup, updated the language for Recommendation 2, 15, and 16, and ICANN Legal advised that they would consider these updates to the language and provide written feedback to the subgroup. So we are waiting for this still, and as soon as we have an update from ICANN Legal, we will of course in turn update the whole group. So are there any questions or comments until now? Good. So I would now like to turn the floor to my co-chair, Thomas Rickert, for the next agenda item, which is a point on quorum. So, Thomas, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Leon, and hello, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert speaking. I have to apologize up front for background noise. I'm sitting at an airport, so I hope that the sound quality is good enough for everyone of you to understand me. You will remember that there was a question from Caboos on quorum requirements, and we asked Caboos and the rest of the group for patience since we did not have sufficient time to address this during our last call, and we promised that we would put it on the agenda for the next plenary call, which is today. So let me try to be brief yet comprehensive with my response. The question was whether there are any quorum requirements for decision making in our group, and the answer is that our charter does not foresee anything in terms of quorum, but what we have established in our group, both in Workstream 1 as well as in Workstream 2, is that we would check whether there are at least 5 individuals on a call so that a discussion can take place. But that does not mean that a group of 5 or more people per se has a quorum for decision making. This is just to make sure that calls are meaningful and that we do not waste the participants' time. We have the 2-meeting rule, which means that no decision is taken in a single meeting, and that sort of makes it redundant for us to have formal quorum requirements, because in between 2 meetings, everyone in this group has an opportunity to review what's been discussed and chime in at the second time this has been discussed, and even more so with the sub-teams that we have now established, where all decisions are made in sub-teams first and then vetted by the plenary. And therefore, there is ample opportunity for community members or for members of our group to make themselves heard during the decision-making process, which is sort of a phased approach. When it actually comes to consensus calls, then you will remember that we have tried as much as we could as co-chairs not to make a distinction between members and participants, and only in the rare, if not never happening case that we see that the group can't come to consensus, we would then do a vote amongst members or a more formal consensus call, certainly reflecting who from the group represents which interests and whether all interests on the group are reflected. So I think that this explains what we are doing or what we've done. Let me just check if there are any questions, but I would suggest that we keep this very brief and to respond to Tabusa's question, does that criteria include co-rapporteur? For some groups, there are 3 rapporteurs. In that case, do you believe only 2 more are sufficient to meet quorum? In fact, there is no formal quorum. We are just asking for 5 people to be on the call so that we can actually conduct the debate. Thanks very much. I would suggest that we take further questions that might be on this offline and report to the list, since we have a lot of reports to discuss today. And that allows me to move to the next topic, which is the first reading on the diversity sub-team. And that's something to be chaired by my colleague, Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And we are presenting the second reading on the diverse subgroup of recommendations. And as you can see in your screen, the main chapters of the report are the executive summary, scope, background and supporting information, description of issues, the current state of play, some recommendations made by the subgroup, and, of course, the annexes as usual. But before we make any further movements on these, I would like to give the floor to Fiona Atsonga, who is a co-rapporteur for these diversity subgroup, so she can walk us through the report as it stands and, of course, give the second reading for further approval of this diversity. So, Fiona, you have the floor. Fiona, might you be on mute? We can't hear you. Okay, so I believe that we're having problems hearing Fiona. I see that Rafiq is also with us, and he's also a co-rapporteur for the diversity subgroup. So, Rafiq, could you please walk us through the different recommendations that we are going to review on this second reading? Rafik.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Thank you very much. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you, Leon, and thanks for everyone to be here. So we thought that, I'm not sure, do you want me to go through again the recommendation, or it's kind of we open the floor for discussion directly, so...
I assume that everyone has gone through the report, and since we have a very packed agenda, I would prefer that we open the floor for any questions in particular. Of course, if there are any questions, if you could help us answer them. And if not, of course, we will be doing the call for approval on the second reading. So I would like to open the floor, and I see that Cavus has his hand raised. So, Cavus, could you please take the floor? And start the timer, please.
Do you hear me, please?
Yes, Cavus, we hear you.
Yes, just very briefly, I think that perhaps for this reading, maybe you ask first whether there is general comment, and then whether there is any point required clarification without any need to go to editorial modification or language improvement or issues similar to that, because we may not have time to go through these things. So first is any general comments. And then if there is anything as a clarification or something which really requires that the plenary embark on that, that is just for facilitate the reading of the document. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. I thought that that was exactly what I was asking for, but I see that I was not clear on my message, so I thank you for clarifying to the whole audience that this was the intent. So... are there any other comments or questions on the status of the report and the recommendations on diversity? Okay, I see Steve Dobianco's hand is up. Steve, you have the floor.
Thank you, Leon. After the recommendation 8, there's a note indicating from the team that a number of their subgroup members thought it was essential to establish an office of diversity. So it implies to me that this was not a consensus recommendation and is not a recommendation that's part of the report. It's just a note. And if that's all it is, I don't think it merits any discussion. But if that is implied as we want to explore an office of diversity, I would want to comment that I don't think that an office of diversity is necessary, nor do I think it's a good idea. But let me ask members of the group, is this a consensus recommendation or merely a footnote? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. I see Fiona's hand is up, and I believe that she might be wanting to take this this question. So, Fiona, you have the floor.
Thanks, Steve, for raising that issue. Now, the group does not agree on having the Office of Diversity, because we could not agree on what the functions of the Office of Diversity would be. We have put it through to the plenary. If we can have a conversation within the plenary and see the need for that Office of Diversity based on some clear functions, because some of the group members saw those functions being already in the different recommendations. And in the recommendation, it is open to ICANN staff to figure out how they want to address those recommendations. If they feel that they will have individuals at different levels handling diversity issues, if they feel that they must have an office of diversity, it's open to ICANN to implement as it sees appropriate. The other group feels that there should be a specific recommendation for an office of diversity, because if we have an office of diversity, then we are able to address all the monitoring issues that you want to do, and most of what is in their recommendations gets addressed and handled by that office of diversity. So we can't agree in the group, and we very much appreciate those who have not been involved in the conversation as they read the report. Do we need to have that office of diversity? Or do maintain the recommendations as they are because of the argument that the recommendations can still address the issues of diversity and give ICANN more room to navigate? Or do we ensure that ICANN addresses diversity by having the Office of Diversity? So that is what we need assistance on from the rest of the plenary.
Thank you very much, Fiona. I hope that answers your question, Steve, and also the comments that I'm seeing on the chat from David McCauley on fintechism. Steve, are there any follow-ups to these, or are you satisfied with Fiona comments?
Thank you, Leon and Fiona. So I understand you clearly to say that this working group did not have a consensus position on whether to recommend an Office of Diversity. So it is not a recommendation. It is before the plenary. If the working group wishes for the plenary to debate that topic, we would need to hear both sides from the interior of the work group with an effort towards trying to see if the broader plenary believed that this was a recommendation worth making. So I'm still confused about whether the plenary needs to pay any attention to a footnote about something where there was no consensus. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. I don't think that's the intention at this point. I would point out that this is something that is going to be included in the public consultation for diversity as far as I can tell. And I would suggest that we just take this out of the report as it stands and leave it to the public consultation to further analyze whether this would be something that we want to follow in the near future. So if everyone is okay with taking off this footnote from the report, I think we could go this way. I see Sebastian's hand is up, but I still see Steve's hand up. Steve, are there any follow-ups on what I just said, or can we go to Sebastian? Okay, so I see that Sebastian is signaling that he has some difficulties to talk. However, I am aware that he wants to say something. So, Sebastian, would you want to take the floor, or should we wait for another moment? Okay,
can
so I don't. Yes, we see you now, Sebastian.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
But I'm not sure that you have a good sound for me from my side, but I'm sorry for that. I don't have the right tool and I am in a meeting. In a retreat, although that's me. Sorry about that. The discussion here, it's an important one, and I within the working group, I am not sure that we can say if there were a majority in one or in the other hand, and I didn't push to have this level of discussion, but I thought that coming to this group and then to the community, with these items to be discussed will be...
Sebastian, we lost you. We can hear you. Sebastian, we are not able to hear you. We lost sound. So, okay. So let's do a pragmatic decision here. If we all agree, we can just leave the report as is, and of course have this discussion in the public consultation. So I see Kavus hand is up.
Yes, I just wanted to agree with you
something which has not been consented in the group, which is counterproductive to discuss and spend time on that. The only thing that perhaps if you want to put in public comment, you should give a name to that, either opinion or views of the group, and indicate that it is not recommendation. That's all. I have no other comment to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavus. This is very useful, and we'll definitely do as you suggest. So next on the floor, next on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg. Alan, would you like to take the floor, please?
Sorry, I thought I saw Julie there. If we're putting it aside right now, maybe I don't need to make this comment, but my hand was up anyway. I really do not see us telling ICANN how to run its business in terms of setting up offices. I think it is sufficient that we put some guidelines in place and make sure that ICANN understands this is serious and something can't be ignored. If an office is needed, certainly by calling it an office, there are implications which the proponents do not necessarily support, that it be a group of five people and have large amounts of resources going to it, and we end up effectively having the diversity police. I think it's sufficient to say this is important, to identify what the issues are and what the criteria are, and leave it to ICANN to implement. If this becomes an issue where clearly the organization is ignoring it, and going forward we have a problem, then we can take additional action. We, the community, can take additional action. But I don't think we should be in the business of doing micromanaging at that level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Next on the queue, I have Cheryl Langdonald. Cheryl, could you please take the floor?
Thank you very much, Leon. Cheryl Langdonald, for the record, I hope I'm clear. If not, let me know in chat. I think it would be astonishing for this group if I wasn't to speak on the matter of diversity. You all know my long history on this matter, and I would like to, for those of you who don't know me, just suggest that I have for many years worked in the diversity area and women on boards, etc., in a number of fora. On the matter of the Office of Diversity, as Fiona outlined, there wasn't a majority of us who could agree on the details of that, and I see Sebastian has put his hand up again, so hopefully he has a better connection now. And so it isn't a recommendation per se, as Steve pointed out. I think it may be a step too far for us to actually remove reference to it from the report. I think it is something that is probably well worthwhile referencing as a matter that was discussed in the work track and that we trust the community may give further feedback on at an appropriate point in time. And finally, I just want to punctuate that to suggest that I have had very specific experience with a number of iterations of such an office, and I think the most polite thing I can say is the results of those have been variable, to say the least. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. So what I'm getting from this discussion is that we're definitely not ready to have this put out as a recommendation, but we don't want to take it completely off the report as suggested. So I think that Kavus made a valid recommendation, which I think it will prove to be useful. And I suggest that we not say that this is a recommendation, but this is something that has been discussed within the group, and that we would like to have some special consideration or comments or thoughts from the community when this goes to public discussion. Next, I have Sebastian. Sebastian, could you please take the floor?
Thank you, and sorry for the bad communication that I was dropped off. I I would like to thank Cheryl for her summary and the actual proposal she made and the support. But I just want to add one point in your thoughts, why there is this discussion about office of diversity. And I am not at all linked with the name of that, even if I put this name a long time ago, it was in Webstream 1. The question here is how much this could be done by staff and how much it's done by other body and by the community. And it's where the discussion is, and the question of the name of the office or whatever, it's not the main item. I guess it's maybe not enough clear, but if we stay where we are with the proposal made by Cheryl, I will agree with that, and I will try, I don't know when, but I will try to come back in writing for your attention later on, because my son is so bad. Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next, I have Fiona, and I would like to close the queue with Fiona because we are already running late on this call. So, Fiona, you have the floor.
Just seeking a clarification from the comments that have been made, the suggestion is that we consider not having it as a note, but having it still in the document, and so it's more of a drafting issue around how we have done how we have presented the whole issue of the diversity office. I just need to someone to clarify that is what we need to do. So we get it out from being a note, we put it still in, we mention the proposal in the rest of the document, but it is not a recommendation.
Thank you very much, Fiona. I would suggest, if you all agree, and of course, Cheryl is willing to take a role on this. If you could please coordinate offline with Cheryl so she can help you on crafting this new version of the language that we're suggesting. So, Cheryl, if you could help us with that by following up with Fiona, that would be much appreciated. So, at this point, I would call for any oppositions to publish this report by the diversity group with, of course, the comments that we've made in this call. Are there any oppositions? Okay, so seeing none, we will make the modifications as agreed and then publish for public comment. So I would now like to hand the floor to my co-chair, Thomas Rickett. And Thomas, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Leon. Now it's time for us to discuss the SOAC accountability final recommendations. And I understand that we are going to have Cheryl doing some introductory remarks, and then we will hear from Steve. Is that correct, Cheryl? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Thomas. It is Cheryl Langdon off the record. And yes, I'm going to do my customary introduction to this matter. This is our first reading of our final recommendations of our WorkTracks activities. And I think it's important, although my other computer has just decided to reboot itself, so I'm not able to read from our covering note, that we, in our rather extensive document, have not made any particularly substantial changes in the view of our work group since our last interim report. We have gone through extensively and discussed all of the public comments from our first PC. We have made some modifications to the report, and Steve, as he takes us through the highlights here, will indeed note those for the plenary, but it is important to recognise that we have a new caveat, and he will speak to that. There are a few particular changes and modifications that were made, and he and Fazi will point those out, and that, of course, in the view of our group, who worked tirelessly, and I wanted to specifically thank my co-rapporteurs, Fazanay and Steve, for the huge amount of work they've done, amongst others, but that we do not believe this is a sufficient challenge for us to need a second public comment. And with that, I'm going to make it over to you, Steve.
Thank you, Cheryl. Steve Del Bianco here, one of the co-rapporteurs for the SOAC accountability. And the slides that were prepared here by staff and by the three rapporteurs might be the quickest way to get through this. But along with the agenda that Bernie sent out to everyone, he included three documents that are consensus documents prepared by our group. One is the final report. Another is a red line comparing that to the report that all of you reviewed back in May of this year, and that we published for the first round of public comment. So it's a very lean and mean, clean red line that allows you to focus on just the items that were changed. And then our third document is one we're particularly proud of, which is an item-by-item analysis of the public comments that were received. I know there were only a dozen entities who submitted public comments on our first draft, but there were over 40 different chunks of comments that we took from those submissions, and we've distributed them in a table, arranged by topic and track, and provided a response. And the response indicates an acknowledgement in the cases where there was support and where there were questions. We did our best to answer it. And then where there were recommendations for changes, we indicate whether we made those changes and where they were made in our final report. So I know that's a lot to digest, but I do think that the slides themselves here will be a shortcut to get that done. For Leon and Thomas and the co-chairs, did you want to allow questions as we go or at the end? I'll assume that the questions...
Sorry, Steve. I had to get myself off mute. What I suggest we do is that you walk us through the slides, and after each slide, which has a recommendation on it, we briefly pause whether there are any questions. I think we should apply this diligence because this is the final final recommendation, so that we get everything out of the way and hopefully can move to the second reading very soon.
Thank you, Thomas. Bernie, would you please go to the next slide? Thank you. Again, I mentioned the number of public comments. Half of the total comments received supported the draft report, and we addressed them by adding clarifications in certain places. I wanted to be clear that one of the items that we had added when we all got together in Copenhagen was this idea of letting the implementation of best practices be something that are handled by the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, or ATRT. And that was a late-breaking idea, and I will tell you that the public comments received said that maybe that wasn't such a good idea at all. And I think that's a risk of adding things at the last minute. We often haven't had a chance to think through whether it's a good idea. The ATRT is already an overburdened process, and there was no support for adding another obligation to the ATRT. I will say, though, that a good idea that we debated for several weeks was to invite ICANN to consider the implementation of these good practices as part of the organizational reviews that ICANN conducts with an outside consultant, not with the community, but with an outside consultant, and that's only once every 5 years. I went in the next turn to the Mutual Accountability Roundtable when we all met in Copenhagen. We attempted to explain that the consensus of our group was that we did not want to formally implement the Mutual Accountability Roundtable, but the plenary itself had enough interest in it that we decided to put it in the report that we put out for public comment. I have to say there was minimal support in public comments for a formal implementation of a mutual accountability roundtable. The same is true with respect to applying the independent review process to the SONACs themselves. That is the same recommendation we had in May, and there was no change to that one. And as usual, comments that came in from the public often exceeded the scope of what we were supposed to work on, so we tried to politely acknowledge that was beyond the scope of what the bylaws for Workstream 2 have indicated we were supposed to focus on. Please go to the next slide, Bernie. We have three tracks in our recommendations. The first track, and this is dictated by the bylaws, the transitional bylaws, the first track was that we were to review and develop recommendations on improving the SONAC processes for accountability, transparency, and participation. And the highlights of track one recommendations are on the slide in front of you. This is a semantic change. Instead of calling them best practices, our group decided to call them good practices. This was an attempt to indicate that for some groups, they may not be best at all. There may be some groups, ACs and SOs, for whom a recommended practice is by no means better than what they already do. So we don't want to call it best, but rather good practices. We now are up to 29 instead of the 25 we had in our first round, and we'll be identifying which ones are new in subsequent slides. We also clarified in the text in two places that all of you, the SOs and ACs and subgroups, you're not required to implement good practices. They are being recommended for implementation, but no group is required. We also clarified that the decision whether to implement a good practice lies with the SOs, ACs, and groups themselves, because it is up to you to determine whether that good practice would be an improvement over the way you conduct your affairs today. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we are not recommending that good practice implementation review be part of the ATRT, but rather that it could be part, if ICANN wanted to add it to the organizational reviews conducted by outside consultants every 5 years for every group other than the GAC. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Thank you. Track one, continuing on track one, and I have a couple of more on track one. Track two and three are very brief. Continuing on track one, here's what we changed. We have added number six for accountability. We said that each empowered community decisional participant, and you know who you are, should publicly disclose any decision that you submit to the empowered community. And that publication could include a description of the process you followed to reach the decision. This is in response to public comments that indicated the empowered community itself, each ICNSO may act in its own interests, but their decisions and recommendations about whether to exercise some of the new powers that we created under the CCWG, that their decisions to exercise that power should be subject to scrutiny by the public. The public needs to know, for instance, if the GNSO has recommended blocking a budget that ICANN has proposed, or the public needs to know what the decision of ALAC was with regard to removing a director and how that decision was followed. It's about transparency, which leads to more accountability to the broader public. Number seven, we added, which was a recommendation from the ICANN board, that each SONAC have links available for their policies and procedures and documented practices. I know that they're buried in the charter and websites of each respective ACSO and group today, but they ought to be accessible in one place under the accountability area of ICANN's main website. This was an easy recommendation for us to embrace because the work would be undertaken by ICANN staff and not by the groups themselves. So, Thomas, this is an area where I'm highlighting two new recommendations for good practices. If you wish, we could stop here for questions, or I can proceed. Your call.
Let's please do that. Let's see whether there are any questions or comments from the group. And if not, we can tick that off the list and move on. Let's just pause for a second. See, there are no hands raised, nor do I see any comments in the chat, so I think we're good to go.
Thank you. And the next slide, Bernie, is about track one again, and this time it's about transparency. Transparency. We have reworded recommendation five because we had some confusion. Our fault. when it came to what are minutes, what are recordings, what are the records of meetings themselves. So to eliminate any confusion, and thanks to the registries for pointing this out, we made it clear that records of open meetings should be made publicly available, and records include things like notes, minutes, recordings, transcripts, and chat, depending on whether you do those things. Not every chat is recorded, not every meeting is transcribed, but to the extent that you transcribe those meetings, that should be publicly available for an open meeting. Look at number six, though. Closed meetings, that is to say meetings that are only open to the members of your AC, your SO, or your subgroup, those closed meeting records should be made available to members of your group, and you may, if you wish, make them publicly available. That's at the discretion of the AC, SO, and group. And for abundance of clarity, we repeated that records includes notes, minutes, recordings, transcripts, and chat as applicable. So those are the two added recommendations under transparency. I'll stop there to see if there are any questions. All right, seeing none, let's go to the next slide, which is our final with track one, and it's about participation. And again, we had three parts of track one: accountability, transparency, and now participation. I'm waiting for this slide to come up. Participation. Thank you. We removed the original recommendation four, where we had said that for any meeting, be they closed to members or open, we removed that one by clarifying under transparency what I just went through with respect to closed and open meetings. So it came out of here and got moved to two separate items on the previous slide. We added number four. This was one about which there was not strong consensus within our group, but we did not want to punt to the plenary. Instead, we worked harder, scheduled an extra two calls, and came to a consensus recommendation that we could all support. And we said that any AC and SO group who elects its officers should consider term limits. So the good practice is to consider term limits. It doesn't say that term limits themselves are a good practice, but that you should consider term limits. Again, why would you consider them? Because they increase the participation of the members of your AC, SO, and group. Number six, if ICANN were to expand the list of languages that it supports, then that support should also be made available to SO, ACs, and groups. So this is suggesting that if ICANN is undertaking the administrative costs and support for additional languages, we would ask ICANN to offer those services to the BC, to the ALAC, to the GAC, and other groups, so that those services could increase the participation of our own meeting records and meeting minutes. Questions on participation changes? Fantastic. Everybody's in an expeditious mood today. Bernie, please move to the next slide. Now we have moved to track two. Under track two, we were charged by bylaws to evaluate the proposed mutually accountability roundtable. And it was proposed in explicit terms in May of 2015 by one of our outside experts. And that was the implementation that we looked at. And it called for the gathering of the leaders of every AC and SO to share practices of accountability and subject each other to a little horizontal accountability, so that ALAC could look over to me and the GNSO and challenge whether we had truly been accountable, transparent, and participatory. Someone from CCNSO could turn to the GAC and ask whether they had been. So that is what is, and it was Rinaldi who gave us this terminology, that is what we would call horizontal accountability across the groups. Vertical accountability is really what the CCWG and everyone on this call has been working on since 2014, and that is the accountability of ICANN.org, both the management and the board, the accountability of them to the internet community that ICANN was created to serve. So we are strong on vertical accountability, but our group at no point wanted to recommend horizontal accountability. And if Rinaldi is, if I'm not misquoting her, Rinaldi seemed to say that while the board initially wanted to see something here, the board eventually came around to say that horizontal accountability was not something that they would recommend to implement. So we are not recommending implementation of the mutual accountability roundtable. I'll stop there and take questions. We only have one more slide to go. Fantastic. Thank you. And the final slide on track three, third and final track of our group, we were asked to assess whether the independent review process should be applied to the SOs and ACs themselves. So think about this. We've all worked very hard, David McCauley and Becky Burr and their group, on IRP and implementation of an expanded and more powerful independent review process. And it is being used by any afflicted party or community member or the empowered community to challenge the actions or inactions of the ICANN board or management. The question was, should that also allow any aggrieved person or entity to challenge what happens inside of the business constituency or inside of the GAC, inside of the ALAC? We looked at the recommendations and we did not make a change. We continued to say the same thing in our first draft, that the IRP should not be made applicable to activities of SOs and ACs. This is not a change. And then finally, we pointed out that the ICANN Ombuds Office can meet the need of allowing somebody to challenge my business constituency, to challenge us on whether we were sufficiently participatory, whether we excluded somebody from membership when they should have been eligible for membership, whether we conducted an open meeting and documented it properly for transparency purposes. In other words, all of those complaints have a place to go in the current ICANN structure, and that is the ICANN Ombuds Office. That is the appropriate mechanism for an individual to challenge. And we note that the duties and powers of the Ombuds Office are likely to be further enhanced and clarified because of the Workstream 2 project on enhancements to the Ombudsman's role and function. That's not part of our group, but we had a lot of participation from Sebastian Bachelet, and Herb Way was on many of our calls. And we verified at each turn that the Ombuds Office has the capacity in its charter to be the appropriate place for an individual to take a complaint instead of launching a formal independent review process with third-party arbitrators. Thomas, that concludes all of the changes we're recommending, and I think it's clear that what Cheryl said earlier is true, that our changes are incremental at most and do not merit another round of full public comment. Thank you all very much.
Thanks very much, Steve and Cheryl, and let me now check whether there are any wishes to speak. I see that Ellen's hand is up, so Ellen, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. My comment is about one of the first slides where Steve was talking about whether the ATRT should look at this and instead is recommending that this be something that external reviewers could look at during organizational reviews. I just wanted to raise a caveat, and this is with full disclosure, being now in the final stages of an organizational review. It changes the dynamic from an ACSO deciding whether a good practice is really applicable and puts the onus on the external reviewer to decide whether that good practice is applicable or not. If the external reviewer decides it is a best practice for this group, despite the fact that the ACSO has decided not, it then puts the ACSO in a position of defending to the board why this is not a good practice. And external reviewers are given a fair amount of credibility and support. Now, obviously, an ACSO can argue against something, but it puts them in a defensive position instead of making a conscious decision on something and leaving it at that. And I have some worries about changing that dynamic and putting the group in what effectively is a defensive position. So I just wanted to wave that red flag. I'm not sure there's an alternative. And clearly, an external reviewer, since it is charged with looking at the effectiveness of a group, can look at anything, including these. But I have worries about explicitly noting it as one of the things they should be looking at. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ellen. And I trust that Cheryl has raised her hand to respond to this. So, Cheryl, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Cheryl Langdon for the record. I certainly understand where Alan is in inverted commas coming from on this, having been one of the co-chairs of his at-large advisory committee review that we are currently licking our wounds from, but moving to the implementation and review phase with the organisational effectiveness committee. That said, however, I'm also quite confident that with appropriate interaction and involvement and participation with the overall changes and development of external reviews that I am well aware is going on within ICANN, and that the Organisational Effectiveness Committee and the MSSI staff will continue over the next few years to refine and review, that we can make sure that Alan's red flag is both noted but is ameliorated by, dare I say, intelligent and effective planning and a setting of scope. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chera. Next is Steve.
Thank you. Steve Del Bianco. As Alan well knows as a participant in here, we did add a caveat specifically for this. The organizational reviews that Alan and Cheryl and I have been speaking of already exist and have in the bylaws of ICANN. There was no change to those organizational reviews as a result of CCWG. And in those reviews, Roman numeral 3 is an assessment of whether the ACSO or committee is accountable to its constituency, stakeholder groups, organizations, and other stakeholders. So there is already a charge that when ICANN hires an outside contractor, that they do look at whether the ACNSO is accountable to its constituencies. So if anything, the presence of these good practices will be a somewhat more objective way for these outside consultants who really don't know a thing about the ACs and SOs to at least have a collection of 29 practices that they can look at. But for abundance of clarity, we added this phrase, that the operational standards could also reflect recommendations that groups are expected to implement good practices only to the extent that those practices are applicable and an improvement over present practices. And here's the key phrase, in the view of the ACSO and group participants. So with that clarification, the consultants who look at it might say to the GNSO, why haven't you implemented good practice number 27? Well, we are making it very clear in our recommendations that it's up to the ACs and SOs to know which of these good practices apply and are an improvement. And so that caveat was added specifically to address Alan's concern. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Alan, you want to speak on this again?
Yes, just very briefly. I have no problem with the comment that is on the slide saying that organizational reviews could include an assessment of it. I would have a problem if the terms of reference for organizational reviews would explicitly list that. Now, that's an operational issue of how we fix our documentation after the fact, not up to this, but I simply wanted to go on record as saying organizational reviews can look at anything if they choose. I just would not want it to be on the checklist of things that they are almost obliged to look at. And so I'm happy with the wording. I do have the concern, and I wanted to put it on the record. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. And since all our meetings are transcribed and archived, it is well on the record. But I hope I can take it that you are not objecting to the recommendation as such, which allows me to invite further comments on the report, if any. So I will pause for a few seconds now where we can declare the second reading, whether we can declare the first reading of the final recommendation successful.
Thomas, as was pointed out, I'm a member of the working group. If I was going to object strenuously, I would have done it at that level. I was just raising the issue for the plenary to hear. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And I guess that's a good point, and that allows me to remind everyone that if there are more individuals that do share Ellen's concerns, which would basically warrant us to push this back to the sub-team, then this would be the opportunity to speak. I do not see any further comments, nor do I see any hands raised. So I think we can confirm, number one, that there is no additional public comment required, and number two, that that this reading is successful. So let me congratulate SOAC Accountability Group, including its leadership, for this awesome work. And I guess this is great news for all of us that we can tick this off the list. And in terms of next agenda items, Olga has reminded the group in an earlier post to the chat window that Jorge has asked to defer the HR discussion to the subsequent plenary. And what we're going to do now, given that both Jorge for the human rights subteam as well as Sebastian for the ombudsman subgroup have asked to defer the hearing or the discussion of their recommendations, that we move straight away to agenda item number 10, which is the staff accountability topic. And Aubrey has been given a heads up that she will be the next one to speak. So we're going to move to staff accountability now, see what the discussion is there. And if time permits, we will then go to ombuds and subsequently to HR. But if there is no sufficient time to hopefully conclude these discussions, we will hear one or both of the topics during the next plenary call, i.e. the one that's taking place tomorrow. I see that Cavus's hand is raised. Cavus, the floor is yours, please.
Yes, Thomas. Sorry, just to reiterate what I put in the chat, and I wish you at least refer to that this is not only from Cavus, is perhaps could be shared by the entire group, what I put in the chat. I don't want to repeat because of the time limit. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. And I guess that we don't have any participants on the call today who are just on audio, so thanks for the hint at your very kind words in the chat room expressing your appreciation for the ones involved in the success of this last agenda item. Thanks very much, Cavus. And with this, I'd like to hand over to Leon to chair the staff accountability reading.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I just want to note, in case I didn't, that the diversity discussion was the second reading, and as agreed, we will be proceeding to publishing and as having it approved in second reading by this group on this call. So our next agenda item is staff accountability, and for that, I would like to hand the floor to Aubrey Doria, who has been kind enough to jump into this before time. So, Aubrey, would you please walk us through the report or the recommendations, the draft recommendations of staff accountability? This would be the first reading on this issue. So, Aubrey, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. I'm hoping I can be heard, otherwise somebody will tell me they can't. Yeah, I see the transcript. Okay. So this is our second attempt at a first reading. We basically took all the comments that came back from our first attempt and talked them through, integrated them in, and changes. Now, the first parts of the report did not receive many comments and did not change much, but we'll go through those first. So the first thing is basically there's definition, and adopted the definition of accountability used by the board and organization in its development of the board resolution on delegated authorities of November 2016. Accountability defined in that context, the existence of mechanisms for independent checks and balances as well as for review and redress. The focus of the group was to self-assess or was to assess staff accountability, and we did have at least one strong staff participant with other occasional participation, and performance at the service delivery departmental or organizational level, not at the individual personnel level. I see Cavus's hand up. Is that from me, or is that from before? Thank you, Cavus. So, okay, can move on to the next slide. I say much of this has not changed. There's a section there, and looking at the report itself for anybody that's following it. So there's a section begins on page 2 of roles and responsibilities. It discusses the primary role of those who work for ICANN, the ICANN staff or ICANN organization, to execute strategy and plans adopted by the ICANN board. They do day-to-day work of the organization, working with the ICANN community in many cases to do that work. There's a point that the staff role is distinct from the roles of the ICANN board and ICANN community. And speaking formally, staff accountability is through the chief executive to the board. Next slide. Informally speaking, though, there are many relationships among the staff, board, and community, and those many relationships are integral to successful work. ICANN needs to hold staff accountable for succeeding in those relationships and in dealing with any problems. Then, in thinking about staff accountability, the important point is that collaboration is essential to ICANN's success. The community needs to be sure that ICANN staff will be congratulated and thanked when things are working well, and also to be sure that the staff are held accountable through the usual set of human resource and two performance management approaches, approaches when things don't go well. Formal and informal systems need to be working together to achieve, and please, next slide. Okay, so basically to achieve accountability. There was a little bit there in cutting and pasting, I guess. And it's all in the document on pages 2 and 3. Clear delegations and open and well-communicated processes for resolving issues will help generate certainty and clarity and ensure that issues, if they arise, are dealt with well. Such an approach also generates important information and feedback for ICANN, allowing it to evolve and improve over time. Cavus's hand again.
Yes, just a small point on number 7, if you allow me a short intervention. In number 7, it is mentioned that the community should be ensured or assured that when the staff doing something, they are congratulated. I don't think that we need to put it in the report or in the recommendation. If they start doing something, they will be thanked. If they do something wrong, they will be warned or deprimed. So I don't think it is up to community to tell them if they thank them or not thank them. This is a purely very managerial detailed point. Perhaps we don't need to do that. I want to know whether you can just delete that, or we can just delete that portion. This is not up to us to decide what the management do with respect to the appreciation to the ICANN or the criticism of the staff or the criticism of the staff. This is, we leave it to the CEO and other people in the ICANN, but not get to that level of detail. Just suggestions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think that would involve basically failing this first reading and sending it back. I think it was considered very important in our discussions when talking about accountability that we needed to be aware of that. Now, that is not in the recommendations. That's just in the discussion of roles and responsibilities, and it's an acknowledgement that as community, as and the board as well, but as community, we basically need to give and take on the accountability and the mentioning of good and congratulations. I think that was considered important statement in the roles and responsibilities for the balance of accountability. And so I'm not absolutely positive since it's not in the recommendations, but I do believe that's something that would have to go back to the subgroup if there's a consensus in the plenary that that should be removed or somehow changed. But I'll leave that up to the chairs. I see there's a note, please add where necessary. Community needs to be sure. Okay, I'm trying to read the notes. The point is that the good work is thanked as part of the ICANN culture. Aubrey, please add a qualifier such as where necessary. Cheryl, as it should be. Greg supports the text as it stands. Jordan, if people only get negative feedback when things are wrong, but nothing positive when things going well, this is demotivating and unprofessional. And I think that was what was trying to be captured in that sentence in the roles and responsibilities, which are not yet the recommendations. So I'll keep going on, and yes, agree that adding when necessary is probably okay. I don't want a wordsmith at the moment to figure out the right place for a where necessary, but of course, a where necessary is always a safe thing to add to a paragraph. Can we go on, please? So to the next slide, I guess, yeah. So clear delegations and open and well-communicated processes for resolving issues will help generate certainty and clarity and ensure that issues, if they arise, are dealt with well. Such an approach also generates important information and feedback can, allowing it to evolve and improve over time. Then 9, an ICANN document, ICANN's Delegation of Authority Guidelines, sets out more detail of the respective roles of ICANN's board, CEO, and staff, and how these interact. It was first published in November 2016. The organization has been improving the clarity of this over time as it has matured, and this document will continue to evolve over time. This document was looked at and discussed within the group. Next slide, please. So basically, after talking about roles and responsibilities, the document has a section on issues, which also did not change greatly since the first attempted reading. Underlying issues or concerns identified through the group's analysis. A, lack of broad and consistent understanding of the existence and or nature of existing staff accountability codes of conduct or other mechanisms. B, lack of an effective diagnostic mechanism to clearly identify and then address accountability concerns between community and organization. Next slide, please. So then we get to the recommendations, and the first one. And so you find in the document these begin on page 4 to address the lack of understanding. And oh, by the way, this section essentially got a complete rewrite based on the comments. Much of the content is certainly related to the original content, but it was discussed and modified and with great participation and such by staff member of the group. One, to address the lack of understanding of the existence and or nature of existing staff accountability mechanisms, the following action should be taken. A, ICANN organization should improve visibility and transparency of the organization's existing accountability mechanisms by posting on ICANN.org in one dedicated area the following. Then there's a description of items. One, description of the organization's performance management system and processes. 2, description of how departmental goals map to ICANN strategic goals and objectives. 3, description of the complaints office and how it relates to the ombuds office. Next page, please. 4, organization policies shared with the CCWG accountability during the course of the WS2, and there's a set of documents that have been shared, and those are listed elsewhere. 5, ICANN organization delegations document, which was discussed. 6, the roles description included in this overall report. 7, expectations and guidelines regarding the development of staff reports for public comments or staff response to community correspondence. Stop for a second. Okay, no, please go back. I'm still at B. Yeah, thanks. Okay, moving on to B. ICANN organization should also evaluate what other communication mechanisms should be utilized to further increase awareness and understanding of these existing and new accountability mechanisms. Okay. Next slide, please. Okay, and this goes to the next recommendation, number 2. To address the lack of clearly defined or broadly understood mechanisms to address accountability concerns between community members and staff members regarding accountability or behavior, A, ICANN organizations should enhance existing accountability mechanisms to include 1, a regular information acquisition mechanism, which might include surveys, focus groups, reports from complaint office, to allow ICANN organization to better ascertain its overall performance and accountability to relevant stakeholders. Stop for a second. Okay, next page, please. 2, the group notes that several new mechanisms are now established but have not yet been exercised enough to determine effectiveness or potential adjustments. The evaluation mechanism proposed here would be helpful in determining effectiveness of these recent mechanisms before creating yet more mechanisms that may turn out to be duplicative or confusing for the organization and community. Next point, results of these evaluations should be made available to the community. Okay, stop for a second. Please go to the next page. And this is 2 continued. Point B, ICANN organization should standardize and publish guidelines for appropriate timeframes for acknowledging requests made by the community and for responding with a resolution or updated timeframe when a full response can be delivered. Point C, ICANN organization should include language in the performance management guidelines for managers that recommends people managers of community-facing staff seek input from the appropriate community members during the organization's twice annual performance reviews. Stop here for a second. Okay, please move on to the next page. And this now is recommendation 3. In some situations, issues may be complex and require cooperation among several of the ICANN accountability mechanisms. An example might be a complaint about fairness filled by one or more parts of the empowered community. Another example might involve situations among the board, community, and or organizations that repeat regularly and are not susceptible to redress by any one of the accountability mechanisms. ICANN should investigate the creation of an informal 4-member panel composed of the ombudsman, the complaint officer, a representative chosen by the empowered community, and a board member. Let me see, does that go on? Yes, if I could go to the next page. The panel could review concerns or issues raised by the community, ombudsman, staff, or board that at least two panel members determine require further effort. While this panel should work transparently, it will, at its discretion, be able to treat issues that require it as confidential. This panel would have no powers beyond those of its members and their ability to cooperate. I'll stop here for a second. There had been discussion on this point in the past. Okay. Yes, I see Julie, please.
Thanks, Aubrey. Julie Hammer speaking. I just want to flag a concern about increasing process and bureaucracy associated with some of the things we're doing. I understand the motivation behind suggesting something like this, but I just want to flag a concern about the resource implications of this particular recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, and you had, I believe, as well as others, mentioned that during our previous conversation, and I think that was some reason for backing off of the sort of adding process to this panel, sort of asking, you know, staff to investigate ways in which this could be created, and I think the hope is that it can be created without extra bureaucracy, because we're not adding new powers. We're not even adding new roles and responsibilities. We're just basically trying to enable these people to get together when there's a problem that hasn't been solvable, as opposed to leaving something to fester. So it's sort of an emergency mechanism, but it still needs an implementation, and I think it needs an implication that's non-bureaucratic. Perhaps, you know, we can add, you know, a word or two about, you know, the non-bureaucracy. And there's a Steve Del Bianco question, who would determine which issues are confidential? And I believe that is the members of the panel, who each have criteria that make their, you know, that define the confidentiality level of the issues that they are talking about. So I believe that would be the panel. Yes, Steve, I see your hand.
Hey, thank you, Aubrey. Steve Del Bianco here. I would invite you to consider giving explicit reasons that would lead to confidentiality. When our group in SOAC Accountability was faced with that, we turned to Michael Karanikolas, who gave us five particular reasons for which a meeting could be closed to members only, for instance. And one of those reasons was, quote, information whose disclosure would constitute an invasion of personal privacy, such as medical records. And there are four other bullets on pages 6 and 7 of the SOAC Accountability Report. This alone would never be a sufficient reason for you to reissue your draft. However, if you were reissuing for any reason, I would invite you to put some indicative reasons in the report and invite you to borrow from what Michael gave us on pages 6 and 7 of SOAC Accountability. Thanks, Aubrey.
Okay, thank you for that. And if that is a permissible action between two readings, you know, certainly would do that. And, of course, if this fails this reading, we'll certainly look at what needs to be done. I also see Finn Peterson with, we should avoid new panels. That would seem to be a complete rejection of this point and of this recommendation. So I wonder whether there is an agreement with Finn that this recommendation that raises a new panel and attempts to do so as lightly as possible should just be stricken, and we should cease worrying about it. So I guess I need the chairs to determine whether that's enough. There's Jordan's comment. But, you know, this is the first reading. The panel, I'll admit, has been objected to every time we've tried to talk to you about it by at least a handful of people. The people in the subgroup thought that it was a necessary release valve for things that aren't currently handled, but, you know, if there's sufficient consensus on the plenary to remove it, we might as well get it over with and, see where we go from here. Yes, please.
I would recommend that we keep this as the first reading of this report, and of course have the tweaks and modifications that have been suggested for our next reading. But I would definitely encourage us to keep this as the first reading of this report. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And there was one recommendation that this be that this is an ad hoc panel, and we've said an informal panel, but we could certainly add the words ad hoc if that makes it better. Okay, then moving on to four, Cavus's hand is up, please, before I move on.
Yes, I think perhaps after your explanation and Steve's explanation, perhaps Finn could change his position, because perhaps he thought that it's a permanent panel. It is ad hoc and informal, and I think it helps. So perhaps he may reconsider his position. Just asking, I'm not pushing, but I think that maybe after this explanation he could possibly agree to the retention of that, because it is ad hoc and non-permanent and informal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Cavus. Okay, I'll move on to number four, and oh, there's Cheryl's ad hoc nature of it is important. So we'll definitely add the ad hoc word in, as well as some other phrases that have been discussed in the comments while I was reading and talking. Okay, four. Now here there is an issue that we're bringing that I did mention in the note. This is the last recommendation. Four, ICANN organizations should work with the community to A, develop and publish service level guidelines similar to the service level agreement for the IANA numbering service that clearly define all services provided by ICANN to contracted parties and to the service level target and the level, service level target for each service. While there was consensus on this in the group, there was one person that wanted us to just put a comment in and give a chance for contacted parties to comment, but the one comment was that service guideline level guidelines are not strong enough, are not enforceable, and therefore wanted to go back to previous wording of service level agreements that had been discussed in our previous failed reading, and there had been a strong indication that service level agreements were too contractual and too hard to negotiate. So basically, as I say, with the exception of one member, but one member who asked to have time to get further confirmation from contracted parties, this issue was tagged, but there was consensus on what's here. Cavus, please.
This issue I have on the next issue is going to talk about KPI. Sorry.
Okay, thanks. So I don't know if there's any discussion, as I say, or any strong consensus in this group to change this to service level agreements. But what we did in the group was we left it open for comment for a week before sending it, and it's been open for another week since then to see if any strong comments came in from the contracted parties saying no, they really wanted agreements. None came in, and I guess I'm asking the same question now. And I don't see any, so I'm recommending that I we no longer have an issue on this one, and that is the that was the consensus of the group. Okay, moving on to B, develop and publish service level definitions that clearly define services provided to members of the community and the expected service level target for each type of service. And that was also changed a little bit to make it a little less of the guideline in the first one and more of a definition. And that also had consensus. Do I have another page or is that the end of it?
I think that's the end of it. Right?
I got the Q&A of it, yeah. So that's where we're at. Hopefully this has the relatively minor though significant changes that people have posed that it will succeed at having had a first reading, but I guess we've got hands up. So yes, Cavus.
Avery, I had a question. Unfortunately, I lost the track. Somewhere, maybe in the report, you were talking about KPI. If I am right, I don't know which part of the report. I read it before, but I don't have it in front of me, and I wanted to comment on that if you agree. Thank you.
Sure. Let me see if that's still in there. I'm just doing a search on the report. I see neither KPI nor indicators in there. Perhaps it's something that disappeared in our last discussions. I don't explicitly remember, but please, make your point. And then we can see if there's anything that fails against that point. But I don't see either KPI or indicators in the report at the moment.
So, if it is deleted, I have no problem. But if somebody brings it back, I don't think that we should have self-defined KPI. A KPI should be established. There should be a criteria. Otherwise, if you leave something to myself to provide KPI for myself, I do everything in positive. So, someone else should look at the KPI or with some criteria if I have to do it. So, this is just a comment for yourself. If it is deleted, okay. If it is no longer there, I have no problem.
Right. There are certainly no self-defined performance, key performance indicators in it. I will do a second check after this just to make sure I'm right, but I do not believe that we have those in there. And as Jordan says, at this point, we can't bring anything back without reopening many cans of worms. And losing any chance we have of making a schedule. So I guess seeing no more hands, I see comments saying it was a good run-through and thanking me, so I guess I'll turn it back over to the chairs to see if there's a decision on whether this has made it through a first reading.
Thank you very much, Avery, for guiding us through these recommendations. I note that there have been some comments that suggest minor adjustments to this document. So I would take it that this concludes our first reading on these draft recommendations. I would kindly ask the subgroup to go back and do the minor adjustments as noted on this call, for example, on the ad hoc issue with the panel, and the minor tweaks that have been suggested, and then come back to us so we can have the second reading on a future call. So I guess that concludes this part of our agenda. I just want to also note that we have had our co-chair, Jordan Carter, on the call. He hasn't been able to speak much because of the 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. In the morning where he is. And, of course, that would disrupt any personal relationships that he might have in place. So we thank you, Jordan, for your support and, of course, understand the situation of you not being able to speak, but through the chat and, of course, being us in the call. I would also like to emphasize the thanks that Thomas is putting on the chat to the team and to Avery on this last topic of staff accountability. And I would now like to hand the floor back to my co-chair, Thomas, for any other business. I believe that we are short in time to address the ombuds discussion and the human rights discussion. So we will be able to speak on these issues on our call tomorrow. Ombudsman and human rights will be addressed tomorrow in our call. So I will now hand it back to Thomas for any other business. Thomas, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Leon. And this is exactly right. We have 24 minutes left on this call, and we don't think we can do the outputs or the HR topic justice if we want to rush this.
Thomas, if you're speaking, we've lost you and cannot hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we'll hear you now.
You're back.
Okay. I was just saying that we do not think we can do either the ombuds or the HR topic justice if we try to rush this in the remaining few minutes of this call. So we are going to discuss these two topics during the plenary call tomorrow. And I have asked whether there's any A or B to be discussed today, but I don't see any hands on that, nor has anyone indicated at the outset of the call that they want to have an AOB. If we can please move to the next slide, agenda item number 12. One more slide. So the schedule is as follows. We're going to have another plenary tomorrow, and then please do mark your calendars for the 4th of October and the 11th of October. The two meetings on the 4th and 11th are optional. So depending on how much progress we are making tomorrow, we can drop one or both of these slots. And then the 18th is going to be another regularly scheduled plenary call. So I trust that there are no questions on this. We just wanted to put the plenary agenda on the record during this call, but there certainly have been invitations on the list as well as explanation of what we are trying to do. I see that Kavu's hand is up. Kavu, please.
It's just a small question. Do we have a meeting tomorrow at 19 UTC for 2 hours or for 1 hour or 1.5 hours? The reason is that I am on the flight tomorrow after an early morning, so I prefer not to have 2 hours. Because 2 hours will start 11 o'clock here and then 1 o'clock in the morning, so I may not be able to leave for the airport. So if it's 1 hour, just a question, just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz. I guess the answer is that we have reserved the two-hour slot in order not to be forced to break or to stop ongoing discussion. If discussions of the HR and the ombuds topics go quickly, we might be done within an hour. So I guess it pretty much depends on the pace that we have during the call tomorrow. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation and for the constructive meeting today. Let's now adjourn. We're going to talk to each other again tomorrow. Thanks very much and bye for today. The recording can be stopped.